AAC meeting, October 2nd, 2014, 2017.
I want to thank everybody for the election. And let's start with the agenda with introductions. One of the things I'm going to ask Mr. Blake and Mr. Roth, based on our latest incidents in the leadership with Mr. Sheehan and with Elder, is to see whether we can't have red alert like falling when I can't get up built into our new tablet for the metro system. So if any more of this fall over, we have ways to get help. So we'll see if Mr. Kent can put that in the letter. But anyway, Phil Posner, and to my left,
Denise Rush, Susan Merrill, first vice chair of this committee.
Carolyn Bellamy, Montgomery County.
Devin Bellamy, from Jefferson County.
Azale Rose Brown.
Tina Columbia, Montgomery County.
Mary Kay McMahon, Washington, D.C.
Philippa Mazzell, Washington, D.C.
Frank Roth, Metro Access.
Christian Kent, Access Services.
Speaking through sign language interpreter, Randy Pope, representing the Deaf Blind Community from Silver Spring, Maryland. Also, from the interpreter, this is Franklin Torres. Deaf representative and an AAC member. From DC.
Steve Kaplan, Washington, D.C., Northwest.
Anthony Elbert, Arlington, Virginia.
Pat Sheehan, Silver Spring, Maryland.
Thank you. Next week, we need to review the agenda and have approval of the agenda. Motion for approval?
Yes.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye. No.
Okay, we have trying to see where it is. Where is it? It must be at 6:40 from the Metro Access Subcommittee. Yeah, so can we... Okay, I better move it up to before public comment. Is that okay for everyone?
Yes.
Okay, so all in favor? Opposed? Abstained? Okay, so we're going to move that up after the review. Okay, next we have to have the review approval of the prior minutes.
So moved.
Second. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? They're approved. We're on a roll. And the chairman's report to the board. Any comments on the chairman's report to the board? Motion to approve. Second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? We're moving ahead. We're on a roll. Okay, next on the new approved agenda is a discussion of the ability drive. Since Mr. Sellerford isn't here yet, What I suggest that we do is move into public comment, and then as soon as Mr. Semelfort shows up, we can do that.
Question.
I
was just that question.
Ask
a question. Can
you ask?
Yeah.
We have the report about the election.
Is it
announced, though?
Well, it was emailed to everybody, but those of you that haven't, Lee, would you like to make the announcement?
Yeah, let's hear that.
And when the inauguration ball is going to be?
The
AAC had their election. It concluded Friday, and or Saturday, I believe it was Saturday. And the new leadership is Dr. Phil Posner as AAC chair, Denise Rush as vice chair of the AAC, and Elva Ariza Silva will be serving as second vice chair. Elva apologizes for not being here today. He, as you all may know, he had a nasty fall maybe over a week ago or 2 weeks ago now, and is still trying to recuperate and understand what the medical issue is. So he wasn't able to attend, but he said that he is going to be listening to the meeting as best he can, and thank everyone who's also called him so far for their prayers and wishes, but he is not there. So that was the result of the election. Thank you.
Lee, thank you. And along that line, I sent an email out to everybody. Hope you can see that it's to start a tradition of adding to the leadership that's similar to what the board does, and that is have the immediate past chair be part of the leadership group. And so rather than doing it autonomously, I think I'd like to have a vote on that if someone would make that motion.
Yes, I appreciate that, Mr. New Chair. I think it is a customary for having the ex-president to be the member of the executive committee until the other president retires, and the new retired president becomes the member of the executive committee. So I'd like to make a motion that our past president become the member of the executive committee of this new committee.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained?
There you go.
Greetings.
Thank you very much.
I hope you can handle it.
Yeah,
I
think so. I'll try to handle it. It's funny, when Bill and I talked earlier, it was interesting this committee never had an immediate past chair in the past, so newly created position. Thank you very much, and I'm sure Phil will find some work for me to do.
I already have. Mr. Kent.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was testing my seismograph to see if the earth shook with the AAC not being chaired by Patrick Sheehan after how many years is it? 22? Something like that?
Yeah.
And, you know, I have to say, I think, you know, it seems fairly pervasive in American culture that we like to see leadership positions turn over, and we like to see new people have these opportunities. It's true in Congress also, but of course you see what happens, though, is there's always this pendulum that goes back and forth between we want new people, but we want the benefit of institutional knowledge. And at the beginning of our country, the folks in Congress were not career politicians. They did their duty and left. And over time, it's evolved into what we have today. When I heard Phil Posner suggest that we have this immediate past chair position, I thought, well, it's absolutely fantastic because we have the best of both worlds. So, you know, on behalf of the Metro staff, you know, I congratulate you, Phil. I think that, you know, your service to the committee and the years that you stood by Patrick, and the two of you sort of co-reported to the board on many occasions, and all of the technical work that you've done with us has been invaluable, and we're really excited to work with you. But at the same time, I also want to say to Patrick that, sir, you have been one hell of a chair for a very long time, respected in the community. You've been one of those people that shows up and you show up, you know, not just, you know, for meetings 1 year, but 22 years running. That's pretty amazing. And we really, really thank you for everything you've done. We tried to thank you a few years ago by giving you the Hettinger Award, but you continued to serve after that. So we don't have a Hettinger PS Award, but you know, and I think we have two Hettinger Award winners sitting side by side up there. So you all represent the best of the best. I think the city and Metro are very fortunate to have you both. So thank you for allowing me to make those few remarks.
So, and I'm going to recommend that at the awards this year that you provide Mr. Sheehan with a Debbie Brown gavel.
Oh, the Debbie Brown gavel.
Okay.
Yeah, the older people will know about that.
Okay. All right.
Mr. Simplefort has arrived. And since we have changed the agenda, are you ready to lead the discussion on Zillow Beach Drive?
Uh-huh.
Good.
Okay, you want to discuss it up front? Oh, okay. So, wonderful committee members, what are your impressions? My first impressions are pretty much 2 weeks in, I've taken about a dozen trips. Some were pretty good, and some were, questionable, where the driver's asking each time, how do I get there? Or like this morning, when I call, I said I'm a Metro Access customer, and they transfer me over, the call drops, and I call again, you know, things like that. Hopefully it's better over time. But we shall see. Ms. Rush?
I called to come to my house to go to MGM. First I called and I spoke with Regency. And Regency told me they can't pick me up because they're just for Montgomery County. And I said, oh. So I called a Zillow cab and they said they would charge me $8. And I said, well, I live right at St. Bernard's Road. I'm not that far. She was just $5. And they said, it's 9-point-something miles. And we only get 7 miles for Zillow cab. So then I called Mr. Blake, and he called me back immediately. He was available, it was a Saturday. And I got him on the phone and proceeded to call again. So Regency, when I called the Regency, they told me, while he was on the phone, we only do Montgomery County, and I can give you the Silver Cab number. So I said, well, I have the number, thank you. I can't really say that to you. But, so then I, you know, Silver Cab, well, Mr. Blake looked up how many miles. One looked at it, it was 9-point-something, and the other one is 6-point-something. So why can't, I couldn't understand why they can't make the shortage of route instead of charging me more. He said that's their company and we can't tell them how what route to take. Well, it makes no sense. I'm on St. Barnabas Road to go past St. Barnabas Road to charge me more and make more money. So I have two issues. Montgomery County should be able to pick me up, and why can't they go to the second, you know, the shortest route? So I didn't get to ride at all that day. I said, no.
I guess my question is, when you, like, think when I began these trips, I just go on Google Maps and MapQuest to see what's the shortest mileage, to see if the trip was under 7 miles. So what is the calculation based on what they feel, or I guess we want to know, because see, I got eyes, so I can look on MapQuest and see what's the mileage.
Well, Mr. Blake was one of the voting at 6.7 miles, so I would understand if they went the shorter route, but they chose to go the longest, and he said that we can't tell them to go the shorter route. So, you know, yeah, right, Mr. Blake, can I ask what you need?
Right, I'll go back to Paul's comments there first, but let me just answer this volunteer. So yes, we called in this Saturday, and one, let's start with the Regency piece. And the Regency piece, what they had done, there were a couple of their call center agents. When a customer from Prince George's County called for a reservation, they would tell the customer that they should call Silver Cab. That is absolutely incorrect, and I have told Regency that. Regency, the management, knows that, so they have promised to retrain the call center staff, all the call center staff, because Regency has a partnership with a cab company in Prince George's County, just like Silver has a partnership with a cab company in Montgomery County, and they're not the same, so it's not Regency with Silver, it's not Silver with Regency, so that in both cases, customers have the right to choose which company they want to ride with, and it doesn't matter which county you're in. So if you're in Montgomery County and you prefer Silver, they have a partnership and they will send the vehicle. Maybe the vehicle won't have Silver on the side of the door, but they're being dispatched. The correlation, if you want to think in your mind, sometimes you call Metro Access. Instead of seeing the Metro Access van there, the cab company comes and picks you up. And you're still going to pay the Metro Access fare, whatever was agreed upon prior. So Regency was wrong to just rush that day. I said that to the agent at the time, but we didn't get into a debate. We just said, we'll deal with it. So then, yes, so then we called Silver Cab. And I, too, that's what I've been doing with all the customers. I go on Google Maps. And I look for the shortest route. And the shortest route from Ms. Rush's home to, can I tell them where you're going? Oh, you said MGM, to go to the spots. Blackjack, excuse me, was 6.8 miles. But at the same time, there was a faster route that happened to be 9.3 miles. When Silver Cab quoted Ms. Rush a price, it was based on that fastest route. Now again, we're subsidizing the private entity. And unlike most cases, I won't be on the phone with the customer like I was at the moment with Ms. Rush. But yes, Metro cannot tell Silver. I mean, we suggested and said there is another route. I mean, this was just a conversation with the reservations. But as a private company, whatever reason they choose to take a certain route, maybe they feel it's safer, maybe that's the best way to coordinate with future pickups. Metro is not running their business, so that's what I was saying when I couldn't tell them. I suggested it, but if the company wants to quote you a fare based on the 9 miles, well, then the customer gets to make that decision and say, well, I don't want to pay the fare that you're quoting me today. And in my opinion, that's Silver's loss that day, not anybody else, because they do that too many times. Well, the customers aren't going to want to use their service. But that is why that was there. I saw a short route. The quote that they gave us was based on the longer but faster route, and that is their prerogative to do so. So, will we follow up for that? Okay.
I got a problem with that because number one, he's going the wrong way. Number two, my problem is also, we have problems with cash before. Ms. Ross is blind. She tells me all the time, I'm blind. So she's riding that thing. Number one, she don't know who's coming. It's an independent case, so they should be able to tell us who's coming to them. Number two, why would you take a cut all around Long Beach Long when you only make a certain amount of money? So I have a problem with Metro not being able to tell the fastest route.
That was the $9, they want me to say $8. $8 would take 16 minutes, and if I paid $5, it would take 14 minutes. Yes. So I'm closer to State Farmers Road, but they would make more money. 2 minutes difference. But when you talk about mileage, I should get to 7 because 6.9, that's 3 miles difference. It goes all the way out to the. But we're just talking about apples and oranges. But the problem is, how are our customers going to know? Well, you're not going to know who's coming to pick up because they may have to get someone that's not still there.
But that's fine. The need is that the customer knows. That's all I'm saying. That the customer knows what cab comes to pick up. They know that call they can call. Secondly, we have to have a little bit of control because my concern is the elderly and the ones without cell phones will get an attack. And the driver will tell them this amount of money, and it's fine.
Well, they're going to tell you before you get in.
I understand that, but you get yourself overwhelmed. You don't understand. Well, sir, ma'am, I had to go this way, so that means you got to pay more. All I'm saying, it shouldn't be no opening for anybody to make a mistake. And the shortest route was cheaper, and maybe more. So already I see a problem. I want to ride it, but I'm concerned about other people who's not as vocal as we are. And the attitude that I hear you taking is, I can't tell them how to run this hair. Well, they shouldn't come and want to be a part of that track or a successful ride. That's all that.
Well, they're saying it's an alternative.
If, I understand.
When you're on the phone, I said, I'm not going to pay. $8 to go, and so I couldn't go. I said, I have to go tomorrow and I have to book my Metro Access trip. So you got to find out in advance, even though it's brand new trip, you got to find out in advance how much it costs because of this.
Am I making any sense to you?
Yes,
I'm not making you want to talk to you.
You're making sense, but yeah.
I'm just concerned about people's faith. That's my first concern. And the fact that we have a lot of elderly riders. They're going to ride if they got to go. If they got to go to the house, it'd be quicker for them to get in the van and go to the house.
Well, let's back up one second, Mr. Melvin. We were talking about fares and the routing. Now, you're saying you're concerned about safety. Please
also,
elaborate.
Also, when I say safety, Ms. Rush had someone that rode accessible. And it worked. They took their house. They went three different places, right?
Right.
But they did not know. Who the fill cab and give that ride.
Right.
So what if it had been disrupted? She wouldn't go outside because she'd been looking for a silver cab. It's okay. All I'm saying is they have to know who's gonna be coming and picking the person up.
Explain on that.
Right.
And you make your reservation with the company, you are making a reservation with Silver Cab or Regency. And anyone who's working on their behalf, both companies through the process have solidified the documents to prove that all of the drivers that are their direct drivers or partner drivers have undergone the state required review as well as their own drivers. So these subcontracts, and as you all may or may not remember, when you were granted opportunities for the to review the RFP. The RFP strongly encouraged partnerships. So it was never a sense or an idea that one company and only that company would be the service provider. We were discussing partnerships throughout, and we said everyone who would be a part of that would have to undergo the state-required background and other security checks.
We're just asking them to let us know who will be booked Okay, we're coming to get to it in 10 minutes, and independent cab is coming, or yellow cab is coming.
That's what I'm going to be.
You can ask them about yours.
I have two questions. When the schedule, when you reserve, and they give you a price, is the driver on the same page when he arrives to charge you that amount?
I can answer that question, at least for silver cab. What I've got with the cab, they feed that information to them. It will say on their screen, their machine, about the customer, at least if I can speak to silver cab, how much the person, you know, the person name, address, where you're going to, and it also says the fare that I have to pay, which is the $5, or if it's over that, the exact fare.
My other question is, would DC Transport usually after schedule when the ride, the vehicle is on the way, they call you back automatically and give you a cab number or a vehicle number or something. So, so does that happen when Silverman reaches?
It wasn't a requirement. We can ask them and strongly suggest that they consider that, but that is not a requirement because that's not their business practice. That wasn't something we were required because we're subsidized on their current service. Now, and just when you speak about Transport DC as an example, when you look at the cabs there, they're all colored the same, basically in Washington, D.C., and they have, excuse me, the name of the driver on, and not necessarily a company. So in their partnership, especially during high demand, were all the drivers exactly, let's say, yellow cab or capital cab? Not necessarily. They were partnerships. They sent you a vehicle. So it's the same kind of practice, but again, the call ahead is not a requirement, but we can strongly suggest they implement something like this.
In D.C., when I use the cab, it not only does the old cab call and say your car has arrived, the driver himself will call me and say I'm downstairs. But I'm concerned about the integrity of this situation. If they're calling to take a ride somewhere, what's to stop the Regency or whoever from always adding $2 or $3 extra to a ride just to make a couple extra bucks? Maybe by the time you multiply that by a lot of people, that's more money. Where's the integrity in terms of taking the shortest route?
Well, now see, again, what we have to do, that's why we're bonding. No, well, what happens in D.C. when we have, there is a flat fare. So that eliminates that. We don't have a flat fare in the Maryland. It's a distance-based fare. And what we stop on is if we try to get over on the customers, again,
every customer won't have you on speed dial. Every customer may not know how to say Google.
They won't get the demand. If they keep using the long distance route like they use with Ms. Rush.
But the customer may not know that they're using the longer route. They may not Google it themselves. They may not know they're getting cheated.
Right.
And that's true. But you Google
it. Exactly.
So what I'm saying.
Ms. Hill and Ms. Patrick and then Mr. Kent.
If I'm visionary fair, how do I know what the thing says when they pick me up and says the fare is this and that? How do I know that?
No, you get a fare ahead of time and you make a decision that you want to pay that fare for that trip. So you will call for a reservation. They will give you, or you can use the app, but you would call for the reservation. They would say for this trip it's going to be $6. Mm-hmm. And you will decide at that point, or like Ms. Rush's experience, let's just keep using that. She called, the estimate she received was $8, and she said, I'm not paying that, I'm not going to take that trip. If she chose to take the trip, her fare would have been $8.
Okay, so was that after she got, my understanding is after she got in there,
No, this is when you're calling to make the reservation.
Okay, so they give you
the price ahead of time.
I try to call a timeout for a second to remind everybody that we have some translators and deaf members that have a hard time moving as quickly as we're moving. So I'll try to ask you to do it one at a time and then speak slowly. So I'll let Mr. Blake finish his statement.
I'll just respond to this. Before you get in a vehicle, before you even say, I want that trip, you know how much you're going to pay, and you decide if that's a price you're willing to pay for that particular trip.
Like, for instance, this Saturday, I already knew because of the mileage to go to National Park to an event. I knew it was going to be over 7 miles. It was around 10, 11 miles. So I asked, when I called to make that reservation that same day, I said, okay, how much is the total that I need to pay each way to go to, the round trip? And they told me $10.50. I said, fine, I would, accept that, me personally.
Okay, we have Patrick, Mr. Kent, and then Tab. Okay, great. Patrick.
Okay, so going back to Denise's point and looking at the way the system is set up, I would think that, particularly with WMATA's name on it, that WMATA would want to make sure that we're either going the fastest or the cheapest. And letting the contractor decide which way they're going to do it doesn't sound like a good business practice to me. So what happens if the contractor decides to take 2, 3, 4 loops around the block or whatever? It's not a good model. The contracts can be modified.
Yes, they can, but...
Hang on. I understand. I've done a few myself. But my point is, I don't know that it's a good... I understand they're private, and I don't know what we can do to change that, but I think that's something we need to think about and talk about. My other question, just so I get both of them in, is in booking a ride myself, I did ask the dispatcher for what the charge would be, and she gave it to me, and that worked out fine. But the ride then took 45 minutes for me to get there. Is there any expectation that the ride is going to be there? And do we have any leverage as people using the service, aside from don't take the trip, which it wasn't something I could do, to improve that kind of service? Two questions. Thanks.
Okay, let me go back to your first one, because I think this is key. Because, yes, not everyone can choose to go on Google and find the in-route option. But how many of us are going to do that for every trip we take? I barely do that with Uber or what have you. The issue is you know how much you're going to pay. Now, if you want to say when you're making the reservation, if they quote you a price of $8 to go to MGM, and you say, well, you want to negotiate with them, which way are you going? They're taking $4.95 to somewhere to MGM as the fastest route. But then you say, well, I live right off of St. Barnabas Road. It might not be the fastest, but you can get me there much shorter. If they agree with that, that's fine. But when you say it has Metro on it, again, this is a private business. It is not Metro's role to say to the companies what route they are to take. That's getting way too... We do that with Metro Access because we control that service. I've never told a single, and we've done over 300,000 trips in Washington, D.C. on Transport D.C. We've not told them a single route to take. That is not the role we're playing in facilitating other alternatives. The key is, and the question you ask, what if they want to go around the block 4 or 5 times? Well, that would create a rate that you would have to decide and say to yourself, am I willing to pay that price? So let me ask you a question. Let's take it out of Metro Access altogether and a subsidized trip. If today, if any of you decide to call a cab to go to Union Station from here, what would you do? You would call the cab company they will quote you a rate, and you will either accept or not accept the rate. The only difference here is Metro is subsidizing a portion of your fare.
So
there is no difference.
There is a difference.
Yes, ma'am.
Because what you're saying is that they actually can do what they want to do. And what I'm saying to you is that Metro is allowing me to drive from the Metro Access package. And if they want to do the right thing, I would think that they would try to take the shortest route, along with the fact allowing the customers to know who's going to come up. Now, they call back from Montgomery County. They get called back. You see the tax bill. My concern are the elderly and visually impaired individuals that don't know what to do with the conversation and can't tell whether they drive all the time. So what you're saying is they can do what they want to do. Now, what I'm saying is that you still have some leverage. If they want to be in this, they need to follow some rules. And that's the reason why a lot of people will find it's not good for them to go any other thing that's out.
Carol, let Mr. Kent go in. I want to ask the question of capitalism. And that is, clearly we have two companies with two different ways of calculating the rates. And if one company does have a higher rate, can the customer just go to the other company, and at the end of 2 months, nobody's going to be using Silver Cab as a driving service?
Yeah,
now, the question is, if you call the other company, the other company says, well, I'm too busy to pick you up when the customer doesn't have the service, then that's a point that hopefully Mr. Kent will address for us and how we can go down the road and possibly getting an extra contractor or modifying the contract. Because I know when I take a cab, most of the cab drivers ask me, how do you want to go? They'll ask me, what would I want to take? If I'm in the neighborhood, if I get off the train in New York City, hey, I'm at the university. I don't know, other than the fact that I can do a Google map. So, Mr. Kent, please help us now.
The county itself, to be air cab, it's like, okay, how do you get there? It's like,
okay.
Oh, I am using the mic.
Let me start by saying, first of all, that Blake and I are addressing this issue from two separate lines of discussion. Okay? He is the project manager, and I'm comfortable with the answers that he has provided insofar as they are accurate about the current arrangement. But I think it's important, some of the things you're saying are resonating with me because I understand why you're saying these things. I understand the concerns, okay? What I think we need to talk about tonight is how does Metro work with you as a committee to work out the bugs, okay? And I think that, because we obviously are not coming here to say to you, well, this is the program, you're supposed to love it, we don't want to hear any criticism of it, just use it and zip, no more. That's not what an advisory committee is for. We absolutely want to know what you think. But I think we need to start with a little context. How did we get to this disabilities ride thing in the first place? Well, we had two problems that we were trying to solve, right? One was the cost of Metro access, and the other is a shared concern that you have and we have, which is who else in the universe can transport people with disabilities safely and effectively other than Metro access? And a taxi industry that is starting to crumble because of competition, because of transportation network companies, a lot of things have happened. What you told us and what the public told us when we came out and talked about abilities rides, you said, well, you all better make sure that you do not start a program that will not accommodate people with disabilities in terms of accessible vehicle. There were a number of things you all talked about, the telephone, the ability to use the telephone to call in, and that sort of thing. So we took those concerns that you gave us, we put it into the RFP, and as it turns out, these two taxi companies were the only ones that met all of the criteria that we put in the RFP. Now, that doesn't mean that we're not going to tell them anything else the whole time that we work with them. It just means that we were able to award them the contract. Now, the thing that I'm going to ask the committee to work with us on is simply this. You know, and we know, that the taxi industry has suffered, right? We want the taxi industry to continue because they've been a good partner to paratransit. They're an important resource to the community. We don't want to see the taxis go the way of the dinosaur. We want the taxis to continue to be a viable alternative, right? Not all of the taxi companies have accessible vehicles. Some of them had the ability and the will to buy them, and some of them did not. So what we required in this RFP is that they both had to have accessible vehicles. And they do, and they're ready to use them. Abilities Ride represents an opportunity for Metro and the AAC to tweak this relationship with taxi companies to show the rest of the country that taxi companies in 2017 and beyond actually can meet the needs of the disability community if you work with them, okay? So we deliberately did a soft launch because everybody's like, okay, well, why didn't you, on the first day of Abilities Ride, why didn't you go ahead and aggressively advertise and try to get everybody to ride the first week? Well, it's because we wanted to let people try it. We wanted to hear their reaction. We wanted to see if there's anything that we need to adjust. So Ms. Rush and Mr. Kemmelford have already given us some information on things that we need to adjust. Mr. Blake is telling you what the original contract asked of these companies. The balance that we have to keep, and I promise it's the last thing I'm going to say because I know you all love to listen to me, is that I heard you, Hazel. I'm trying to help, okay? I can read minds, okay? But I'm going to tell you, the more that we ask of them that they weren't expecting, the more they're going to worry about their money. So what we have to do is balance what we ask them for without getting them nervous about the money. Now, the truth of the matter is, you asked, Carolyn asked, what's to stop them from charging extra money? What we hope is that unlike Metro Access, where the companies have to stay within the prices that we agree to, these companies, and I can tell you, because we've worked with both of them before, what they want is they want volume. They want lots and lots of trips. So the more that they give you prices that you don't want to pay, and you say, well, the heck with you, I'm going to go back on Metro Access, they lose. It's market forces that is supposed to get them to be reasonable with you about the prices. If they pick a long route and price you out of the service, they're going to lose business. So I think what we should do is just a suggestion, Mr. Chair, is that, and Chris hasn't gotten to this yet, but I think that there should be a mechanism through which you all make recommendations about Abilities Ride, you give them to Chris, and Chris will carry them forward as your representative to talk to the companies and see if there are any tweaks that can be made. But the idea here is that every time that you ride Abilities Ride, you are helping the taxi industry to find a way to keep a foothold in doing paratransit work. But every time that they don't accommodate your needs, they're helping themselves out of the business. So hopefully, reasonable people will find a way to meet in the middle. Thank you.
Thank you. I have two comments. One is a result of this past board meeting, which I attended, and the customer service meetings that I attended. And then as DREC has set an example on some of the issues that they had of having the members from your jurisdiction meet with staff and their board representatives. And I had the opportunity to chat with Mr. Augustine from Prince George's County. And he thought that he would be delighted if Mr. Blake, Mr. Kent, and representatives of Prince George's and Montgomery County could all meet with the Maryland representatives, which would be he, Mr. Goldman, and Keturah Harley, to discuss this. And one of the advantages is a lot of the decisions cab makers, cab drivers, and cab companies make are financial. And as political appointees of those two jurisdictions, there's a lot of things those local boards can do for the taxi companies. I know in Arlington County, there's a lot that the commission has done to make life better or not better for the cab companies. And so it's a little bit more oomph for the discussion. And so he said they'd be delighted to meet and to ask B or your secretary to contact Jennifer and set up a meeting where you could all get together and talk about it. I'd recommend waiting a couple more weeks and get the list of issues and let them know what the issues are beforehand, because sometimes the local county commissions can be really helpful in getting things done. The other thing that came up at that board meeting was a request from a gentleman who's wandering around over there in the corner, wanting to know why the contract is not posted on the website yet. And I know in all purchases, there's a certain time between when it's let and when it comes out. There are certain things that need to be redacted. And basically, for the new Metro Access contract, you know, I waited a month or so before it came out. So I promised that I would ask, is that in the process of being put into releasable form and posted on the website, or
yes,
if someone requests to pay for a Xerox copy of it, they can do that. And the answer is yes,
yes.
And we'll move on to the public input. hopefully everybody's happy. Are you happy with that?
I'm not happy.
Okay.
Well, Dr. Commissioner, I have to tell you, there's a difference between answering Mr. Orleans and making him happy. I will tell you this, I have not endeavored to change him, his state of mind by any of my answers to questions.
That's not entirely true. I would have been very happy, as I had requested, when the two persons come down to this meeting tonight, they bring along copies of the
And he did say that. And let me just share this. What you said is correct, Phil, that it isn't in releasable form yet. It is, you know, the contracts are public information, but, you know, sometimes I think people are surprised when we finally release the documents. They don't always look like what people envision. Our contracts are very formulaic, and sometimes it's, you know, it's name of company, rate, two signatures, we're done. The RFP document is the one that has all of the rules and stipulations about how the service is supposed to operate. But it is going to be released. You know, if I could get things to happen at Metro as fast as Mr. Orleans wants them to happen, I would be happy to. But unfortunately, it doesn't always go quite that quickly. But I'll say this, I love the idea of the meeting with the board members. You know, I'm thinking that if that's something that you all would like to do, and I appreciate you offering Mr. Blake a little more time to work with the company since he just started doing this very recently. But I think that if, I mean, do you have a preference on, like, maybe so he doesn't have a preference. So then that means, let me just say what I'll do is I'm going to talk to Jennifer Ellison, the board secretary, and let her reach out to the board members. In the meantime, are there particular county staff that you're talking about, like the head of the taxi commission? Is that what you mean?
Well, I think it's important that we just have, no, I think it's important that we have a small group to talk to, focus, have a list of things that need to be done, and see what the best way is to get them done.
Okay.
Because the folks from the board will know who their contacts are in the various counties.
But so you're saying to just them.
Yeah.
So this meeting would be, it would be board members and staff and AAC and not the county staff?
Exactly, exactly.
Okay, all right.
And then let it move on. Okay, we spent a lot of time on this, and so what I'd like to do is let's move on to customer comments, because we'd like to get them forward, and then we'll come back to our, well, we're back to our regular schedule, and then we'll move on. So we have two customer comments right now. First one is from, okay, I can't read. It's Bruce. It starts with the letter B.
Bill?
Bill?
Bill Orley.
Oh, is that you? Okay, go ahead.
First, I'd like to suggest that I thought the Earth did do it a while ago when I learned that the king is dead, long live the king. But the king's not dead. He's only been emeritized. He's going to be around another 22 years. You know, it's interesting. Everything was in the RFP, we're told. But when the contract was awarded, it was awarded, quoting Mr. Blake, it was awarded to Regency and Silver. But not Regency and Silver alone, they're partners. Does anybody here know who their partners are? When you call for Silver in Prince George's County, or when you call for Regency in Prince George's County, and they know that they can come pick you up, do you know if it's not them, it's going to be their partners? Who are their partners? I would suggest two things. One, I don't look forward to it, but something one day is going to happen on one of these vehicles. And when somebody decides to sue, they're not going to sue just Bob Nabley from Silver or just David Mulkey from the Regency. They're going to be suing those individuals and or their partners. Nobody knows who they are, or at least not yet. But they're also going to be suing WMATA. And to suggest that WMATA is now hands-free, they're just subsidizing the ride. They have no responsibility. It's those two individual entities and their partners. I think WMATA is in for a reckoning. What I had said was that I thought the AAC was going to request, and I heard the request made, and I heard the answer, it will be posted. We don't know when. Some people would like, we don't know when, and some people would like to inquire now about Bob Nabley, who should have come to the AAC along with David Boeby, and the AAC should have had an opportunity to ask the question, such as, who are their partners? Is it Paramount Cab in Prince George's? Is it Bluebird Cab in Prince George's? Who are their partners? There's a lot of details yet to be worked out in this program. I think that reporting requirements of these entities to WMATA is important. We don't know the details of that. I look forward to the day that Mr. Augustine and Mr. Goldman and Ms. Harley and also Kathy Porter, a former chair of the AFA over at TVB, who's interested in this question, would come here and, along with Bob Nabley and David Mulvey, have the opportunity to hear from them. One more thing, please.
That's okay. Bill, if you'll make a list of everything you've just said and give it to me, I see you all the time, I will promise you it will be
I will sit down and shut up. Actually, I have to go. But I'm looking forward to that prior to the next meeting, maybe even prior to the next subcommittee meeting. It will have been posted, and for those of us who can't avail ourselves of what's posted, get a hard copy. So that would be 2 weeks from today. Let's hope it's available.
Right. Hey, Mr. Chairman, I think I said it earlier, but I do want to put on for the record, if you call Regency and you're from Prince George's and you need a ride on Prince George's, their partner is Yellow Cab of Prince George's County. If you call Silver from Montgomery and you want to ride in Montgomery, their partner in Montgomery is Action Tax. Thank you. Ms. Adams?
Hi. My name is Nina Adams. This is my first meeting, and I really don't have any comments now. I'm a bit late because my wheelchair broke, and I see there was a lot of paperwork to catch up on, so I would just, at this time, like to introduce myself and say I will be back, but I want to have an opportunity to go through all the paperwork.
Are you a Metro Access customer?
Yes, I am.
Now, just my name is Paul Simpson, the Metro Access Subcommittee Chair. Now, we do have a meeting tomorrow. Monday is Monday.
Excuse me, can you raise your hand so that she can see?
Oh, sorry.
Can't actually see something. Very good. Thank you, sir.
So I just wanted to let you know that there is a Metro Access Subcommittee that meets the third Wednesday of the third Monday of every month and discuss all Metro Access policy and issues.
Okay.
4 to 6 p.m.
Okay.
Just
I think that's on the sheet here.
Yeah.
And although I've been in the district since 2014, I've rarely used service because it's been so bad. The last time I got stranded while I was doing my laundry, I said, you know, I think I can do better on the bus.
So I just wanted to let you know that because there's a customer comment period.
Okay.
Then where you can have your voice heard.
Okay. Thank you.
And I guess I'm going to be assisting in Bill's place. Not just speaking.
Okay. Next on the agenda is Mr. Ross about the free ride program.
Yeah, he just stepped out, so he'll be back in a few minutes. Now, at the risk of starting another question, I mean, I'm going to ask some more questions, but he just stepped out.
Well, Paul, you didn't share with him about a cab ride that they didn't drop you off at your door. You had to ask them, didn't you? I know you're not going door to door, but can you put me in front of them?
Yeah, it just seems with the taxi company, it seems commonplace. They like to pick up across the street from where you live. It'd be nice. I know it's not door to door, at least come to me at the curb.
Okay, that's a good point. Now, you didn't write that one to me, did you?
No, I think I stated in my initial email of, you know, that case. But, you know, that it'd be nice if they kind of do that. And again, just work on the customer service piece on the phone so people are not frustrated just to try to make a reservation and they have to go to two or three people.
Yeah, but also, they need to, I know it's not door to door, but if you just brought me out across the line, across the street, I don't know where I am.
Do you agree? Have you had that experience already, though?
No, me.
Not sure. Okay. But no, we agree. They should drop you off across the street.
All right, I guess we're going to Mr. Frank Ross next, if we're done with
Doris.
What? Oh, Doris, we
did. Yeah, he's still alive.
No, that's my cue to staff, but Ms. Rush, I can't hear, and I think it might be proximity to the mic, or it's not on. And I wasn't hearing you, Paul, but until just 2 seconds ago, so I don't know whether it's some mics are not functioning or whether it's proximity. But I mean, I wasn't hearing you before, but now I'm hearing you as well. So maybe people can be close to the mic.
All right, so Denise now is chairing this meeting with me, assisting at the request of Phil.
Okay, Charlie.
Hello, everybody. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good. Thanks. Hate to sound like a sycophant, but I've taken 8 rides on Regency since this thing began. And 8 rides have all been excellent. I've had any problems. The charge was always $5. And we're went all the way to the mall, all the way to the fest line, all the way to the meetings. Everything went really well. The only thing I can say, if there was a downside, is that they have returned to the old taxi practice of 15 to 20, which means 15 to 20 minutes. And only once have we had a wait like close to 20. So in my view, it's working excellently, although I understand the points that people have made. Thank you.
Thank you. And Denise, do you want to move up to the next presentation?
Well, Frank isn't here, so what's
oh, it's not here. Oh.
Yeah, Frank stepped out. You're next. Okay. And so I'll just, and one last thing I'll wrap up. Charlie, I appreciate your points. Paul, you know, I'm working on yours. And Ms. Rush, you know, you can call me anytime. And that's for everybody when it comes to this or anything else. In the first 10 days we did do, there were reported, I want to say 130 trips including 9 on wheelchair accessible vehicles. There have been a few complaints, and I take all of those serious because I don't want any complaints. This was similar to the startup of Transport DC. We had a lot of complaints in the first month. Now we're doing 130,000 trips a year, and the only complaint is, why do I have to wait to the end of the month to start, or why can't I go everywhere I want to go? So we want to get to that level with this, and your feedback, I'm not taking it as harsh or criticism. You're giving the constructive feedback that I need, because I'm not riding the service. So I need to hear from you, your experiences, good and bad, so I can reinforce with them what they're doing right, and I can really kick on them what they're doing wrong. So we want to continue this. Got to continue the dialogue, both in the meetings, but also offline, so I can get really to the specific details of your individual experiences and try to make this service work the way we want it to for everybody. But thank you all.
Can I ask a technical question?
Yes. And then we'll get to the
okay. Mr. Blake, I wanted to ask, is there, and this is just, I didn't hear all of the comments, but I heard something about the taxi taking people on longer rides to ride up a fare. So what I do know, and I use taxis a lot, is that the primary directive for a taxi driver is do it fast, you know, so that there is no deadhead time. They want to complete a ride and then go on to the next. So what I was wondering is, in the RFP, or the contract, in the contract, is there any performance requirement that says you have to stick to the manifest route or the GPS route or whatever? The reason I'm asking this question is not just a matter of getting there fast, but also with that prime directive for taxi drivers is the issue that they often will know about what the traffic pattern is, you know, on a day when there are crashes and things, they're listening to the radios or whatever. So, you know, they might want to take an alternate route to get out of that and not sit, you know, in standing traffic. So is there some provision that addresses that in the contract?
That's a very good question. It goes back to the point I think Denise and I were talking about and others. But no, we have no provisions in terms of their routing and their operation of service. We do collect trip data for every trip, and that data is used not to measure the length of the trip, but to measure the equality in terms of wait time and customer satisfaction of those who are using sedans versus those who are in need of wheelchair accessible vehicles. And I would just say, just from my little research in the industry prior to the RFP, I know back in the day, and I even tried sometimes myself and I realized that I made a mistake, and I hate to let computers run our lives, but oftentimes, often the computers know about the accidents before we do, and that's what they're being driven by. Again, using the example of Ms. Rush that Saturday when she called me, what the computer and what the company quoted her was the fastest route, although intuitively you would say, how in the world is 9 miles getting on a highway, coming back around, is faster than just getting right on St. Barnabas Road? I mean, I'm looking at it, but the St. Barnabas Road, at least according to Google, at that moment, at that day, was a longer trip for some reason in terms of time, not distance. So, no, we didn't get into what route they would take. But again, we're going to have a conversation with them. I'm taking that down. My first point and my big focus has been to ensure that customers get to choose whichever company they want, based on, regardless of what county they're in. But if we can get to a point where we're saying to the companies, I'd rather take a different route, if they allow that, that's their private business, and we would support it if that's what the customer wants. But we are not in a contractual position to say they must follow a certain route, because frankly, Metro doesn't have a way of assuring that route. We don't. We want you to have the flexibility to choose, and just like in D.C., customers make that choice. Cab companies drive the route, and the customer pays the fare if they're satisfied with the service.
All right, thank you.
Pleasure.
Move on to the rest of the agenda. So Denise, I think I see next, show service for plan, elevator outage.
Yes, I forgot about that. That was me. So yeah. I'll be right there. This will be real quick, because I think I took up a lot of time tonight. So shuttle bus service. Now, Heidi's not here tonight. If you all remember, this is when the elevator is out and a customer needs to get to the next station, and we provide shuttle bus service. When I first arrived, Heidi Case was very adamant, along with several others of you, about the poor quality of the shuttle bus service at the time. Working together, we've resolved that issue. We haven't had any complaints about the shuttle bus service, at least for planned elevator outages. And that's what this is going to be. But what Metro is looking at, and we wanted to give you a heads up, because if it happens, we don't want to be in a position to say we did not at least bring it to your attention. And I've also put it on the agenda for the bus and rail subcommittee if we want to have a more detailed discussion. But within the next 2 weeks or so, Metro is considering releasing an RFP in which the shuttle bus service for planned elevator outages will no longer be provided by Metro bus vehicles and drivers, but we will use private companies utilizing wheelchair-accessible vehicles to provide this service. Now, the experience of the customer is not going to change. If you need a shuttle bus, for example, Judiciary Square elevator is going out of service for long-term repairs, at least 5-6 months. There's currently a shuttle bus service, because the other side is under repair, takes you from Judiciary Square over to Gallery Place. And that way, then you get back on the system. Right now, you would get on a Metro bus vehicle, one of the big 40, your short vehicles, a 60-footer. In the future, you're going to be getting on a van that looks probably like a Metro Access vehicle van, but is run by a private company. Using Abilities Ride as an example, unlike Abilities Ride, where we're saying, you've been hearing me say throughout this process, that we're simply subsidizing a portion of your fare on a private company, this service will be run by Metro. This will be a Metro service because it's a Metro ADA responsibility, but it will be operated by a private company if we move forward with the RFP. And when the RFP is released, we certainly will provide this committee with an accessible copy, and we want to hear your feedback or concerns of this proposal once it's released. But that will be coming up soon, and we can talk more in detail at the next meeting if we all feel there's a need for a more detailed discussion. But I'm available for questions tonight as well.
There is one public comment related to this. I'm going to let that go first, and then I guess get questions from committee members.
Hi, this is in regards to your comment about the service for the elevator shuttle. I've been denied access to the elevator shuttle at Chinatown, and I ended up having to roll my wheelchair here because the driver is on the back of the bus on the phone. He doesn't want to utilize the service or allow me to utilize the service. And I've been told that I've been sitting here all day. No one wanted to ride. I'm on break now. You have to wait 20 minutes. So it's easier for me to just roll up. It was harder. And I ended up, the last time that same driver was there, I called the number and spoke to someone and told them, this has been going on, and I'm just one person. So that is a real problem. The drivers, there's an older gentleman,
he's like, he's happy just for anybody to ride. But the younger gentleman, I'm interrupting his meal time or his movie time, whatever he's doing in the back of the bus where it's dark and he's got a cell phone. You know, and I feel like, okay, so what? If I didn't have a cell phone and I couldn't call for the service, you mean to tell me I can't come up to the bus and you see my wheelchair and I ask for the shuttle service and you can't provide?
So you were telling him that you were not allowed to get on the vehicle and you take him around the corner.
One of the times he said he was going on his lunch break, he's been waiting all day for someone to ride, no one has written. But I'm thinking, you're getting paid either way.
Right, yes. And so we can do a couple of things. You certainly can call my office and let me get more details from you. But if you want to take a mystery trip, if you will, and let's go out there and let me know. But let's see this in action. Because that is absolutely wrong. There is no theoretical break, because most of the time they are just sitting out there. That's one of the reasons for this proposal. With single tracking, because of the absolutely necessary rail track work, safe track, and the extension of the concept of safe track, we're trying to utilize our Metro bus vehicles to move as many customers as possible. When a vehicle is just sitting, as you said, all day, and hardly providing any service, that's not necessarily the best use of Metro's resources at this time, and that's why we're looking at this proposal. But what you're experiencing is totally wrong, and I'm willing to intervene. So we need to talk, one, about who the driver is, the time, and we get all that from you offline. But also, if you want to go out there, I'm willing to escort you on a trip, and let's see this in action.
Okay. So I can really. Now, this is just a long-term elevator outage. My only other place where there is major issues is at Brooklyn Station. Say I may catch the elevator, I mean utilize the elevator to go to the aquatic center. I come back, someone has broken the elevator. The station manager tells me, because I'm only going to Union Station, that they don't call the elevator shuttle from that stop. I need to go out and find a bus that goes there. I said, the difference between you telling me to get on the bus, which is the 80, it drops me off down the hill, which I'm in a manual wheelchair. I have to go up the hill to get inside of Union Station. It's not fair. You have all these signs right here. And the other, with that station, if someone pulls the fire alarm when there's no fire, they don't know how to reset the whole system so that the elevator resets as well.
Just clarify on one thing. So the station manager, I'm hearing the quote, and I believe, I definitely believe that person probably said, here's the, so in a partial defense, but also letting you know where they went wrong. When they said they don't call shuttle for that particular station, that's wrong. You shouldn't say that. But per the ADA and our training, what the station manager is supposed to do is, because oftentimes in a system, what happens, you get to a station, especially an unplanned outage, the shuttle bus is going to take 45, 50 minutes to get to you. So the station manager is required, per the ADA and our training, to give you the fastest way to get to your destination. However, so he or she who said the alternative about the bus was right, but they're wrong because they cannot deny you that. Because if you know at the end of the day where that bus is going to drop you off is inaccessible, you absolutely have the civil right to the shuttle bus service. So they were half right, but very wrong on some other points. And again, we can highlight that station manager and I can get some retraining for him or her based on your testimony.
So I see Doris and Philippa. Do you also have a comment? No. No. Okay, Doris.
Yeah, this is just a question. So I understand, please correct me if I'm wrong, that the private van or whatever service or services that you would use for planned outages, or that's going to be used for planned outages, that's going to be the vehicle that's either stationed at the metro station where the elevator is or wherever, and will it only otherwise use the elevator. And the second half of it is, I understand that from what you're saying, if it's a planned shutdown of a station, or they're doing track work, you know, kind of thing, like during Safe Track, that there are going to be bus shuttles in that case, or are you going to have both types of vehicles? And if you do have both types of vehicles, will the person needing the shuttle still be able to get on the bus if that's what they want, the bus shuttle, if that's what they want to do?
Two very good questions. So yes, and most systems, including Metro, when it comes to elevator outages and shuttle bus services, the vast, vast, overwhelming majority of customers who use those shuttles are people in mobility devices, wheelchairs, and the like. However, if you have a disability and you feel you need that elevator shuttle service, even if you're not in a wheelchair, you absolutely have a right to request that shuttle service. So it's not exclusive to people in mobility devices. It's just, generally speaking, if you're not, again, we're not judging a disability, but if you're not in a mobility device, and let's say the escalators are working, you're probably more likely to get to where you're trying to go by utilizing the escalator and not waiting on the shuttle bus service. But to answer your question, anyone feels they need it based on their his or her disability has a right to request the shuttle service. Second question, yes, on these planned station work, single tracking or shutdown of stations, we use Metro bus vehicles. And this proposal is to free up big vehicles, as being described as being stationed outside of Gallery Place, for example, waiting for one or two persons a day or five a day to use it, instead will be utilized for the station shutdowns to carry more customers more frequently. So no, the contracted service would not be a part of the station shutdowns. We're utilizing the contracted service in an effort to free up Metro bus vehicles for those type of situations.
All right, thank you. Now we're going to move along to Lisa's piece next on the agenda. Oh, she's got it. Mr. Roth is not here either, right?
Yes, he's not here.
Ed, you want to do your subcommittee report?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ed, give your subcommittee report. That way we can make effective use of the time.
Well, primarily, Mr. Hammer provided an overview of Metro's FY 2018 state of operations. And it was a fairly lengthy discussion concerning some of the jurisdictional changes due to the budget. He was talking about several lines that would be affected by Prince George's County, the W-14 and the D-18. And then in Virginia, 16, right along Columbia Way, some of the changes there. Also, they had the regional goal of having 100 bus stops improved yearly. And I think this year, the Metro has plans to improve at least 51 in Prince George's County, the bus stops. And I think this he's going to do another discussion this month, or continued discussion this month, on the bus stops. And because he wants to get an idea of you know, some of the bus stops, some of the sort of idiotic bus stops, you might say, that he's improved. But maybe give an indication of where they are. So that was primarily what we bus and rail
Sure, let me ask a question of a, well, actually I wasn't going to ask a question, I was just going to also comment regarding bus routes and that sort of thing. At the board meeting last Thursday, there was about 30 people that came and talked about, from the retail industry, hotel industry, talked about late night bus service. It looked like it was an extension of the public hearing. And the board got an earful with respect to late night bus service. The other thing that was interesting is that a lot of folks came and talked about wanting to have a fixed fare, which is something this committee has advocated for. They were actually talking about a $2 fixed fare, which would be wonderful. But where, you know, I don't know where that will go, but it's just interesting that those discussions came out from that group. And certainly on the fixed fare issue, this committee's already been on board with that sort of thing. But late night bus service is something that was advocated for. And I think also there's been some movement with respect to late night rail service with respect to Nationals games coming up.
Yeah.
My last thing would be also that the RAC and Phil, Wallen told me for the RAC to attend RAC meetings when I get on his behalf. They are going to be looking at the 7,000 rail car series, and I'm looking for some, what do we want to see as far as improvements go on those cars. So we've got a list of improvements that we have talked about in the past, so I'll be advocating for those on the RAC meeting on Wednesday night.
Thank you. Doris, you have the last word, and then we'll want to be.
Yes, and I know that I get the bus and rail committee brought up lines in Virginia, in particular, the halving of service by eliminating the 4A line and some reductions in service of the 7 line, which carries a lot of people back and forth from the Pentagon to the west end of Alexandria and into Fairfax County and Lincolnia, Franconia. But what I wanted to ask, sort of in relationship to that item, but didn't think of until now, is if staff could tell us here, or if it's something that could be answered at bus rail, and that is, when I get on a bus, and I'll give my example because I'm at the very border between Arlington and Fairfax County. When I get on a bus where I live, there are 2 buses serving the 3 buildings in my complex for over 1,200 people, and both stops are actually in Arlington County because of the way the border line weaves in and out. Although the one right directly in front of my building on Route 50 happens to be an Arlington stop. So I want to know, for purposes of the statistics related to usage, whether I am counted as an Arlington County rider versus a Fairfax County rider.
All right. Thank you.
Good question. We'll follow up on that and find out what we can. Now, Mr. Chair, I don't know if Mr. McAtee has finished his report.
Did you finish your report? Because we do need you to be in there.
This would be a great segue to the Frank Ross presentation. You're finished,
sir.
Okay, so he's
yielding
his time.
Thank you, I do apologize. I had a customer service issue to hear. All I wanted to do today was just let everyone know that we found out Arlington Dash on Frank Roth, Director of Eligibility Certification.
is now going to accept the conditional card for free transport on their bus and service, which is a great thing. As I'm talking to Mr. Posner, or Chairman Posner earlier, I just want to point out, we've been sort of tracking the free ride program since around March when it was fully activated, and we're tracking both the fiscal year and calendar year usage. And calendar year since March, there's been 2,100,602 free ride trips used on the card, and for fiscal year, 757,655 in this fiscal year. So starting since July. And that's the part of it.
Yeah, Pat, go ahead. Andy.
So, Frank, you probably have this number in your head since you look at those two numbers. If those folks were taking, and do you do this, if those folks were taking corresponding paratransit rides, what would it have cost? We know.
We could say $4, I guess, to the average and multiply that. The thing is that we don't have a tie-in beside. We don't have a tie-in on the folks that are taking the free ride.
Mm-hmm.
They're used to paratransit. Right now, so, there's no way to tie that together.
What if you said, though, Frank, because the cost of a paratransit ride is not just $4, it's $55. Correct. If you count right. The overhead. Can't you use that?
Here's what we, I've cautioned Mr. Kent and Frank in just this regard. Frank was absolutely right in what he's saying, and I hear where you're going, Mr. Chairman. But we want to be careful. If you remember our friend Carol Tyson, and she has always discussed the term latent demand. And latent demand is exhibited in this program in the sense that, given that it's a free ride, there are probably trips that customers are taking, which is a good thing. So don't get me wrong on that, but there are probably trips customers are taking that they may not have otherwise taken if paratransit was their only option. So I'm more careful about tying a specific number to the usage of the free ride benefit. I simply believe we should continue to encourage customers who have this benefit or MetroAccess eligible to use as many trips on accessible fixed route as possible. But if we try to quantify a number directly to the Metro Access, it's a little difficult to prove, and I think it takes us in a direction we may not be able to always absolutely definitively defend.
So I can't say Mr. Roth said X amount of ride time, 55 people, blah, blah, blah.
No, just say Mr. Roth said a lot of trips have been taken, and as I've always said, when you've heard me talk about Transport DC, you hear me talk about ability to ride as alternatives to Metro Access, but I've always said the number one alternative and our number one goal is always making the fixed route system accessible, and that's the key alternative because that's the most flexible and most beneficial to all customers, including those with disabilities.
Very good.
All right, thank you. B, you're up next, and I'm at detail. I am not giving a report because basically it was all about abilities right anyway. So you are the last thing on this agenda, unless it's your business.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I want to remind members about the BRS meeting for next week. It actually will be on Tuesday. Monday is a holiday, it's Columbus Day, and I'm sure members have received the press release Metro sent out so that just so members and the public know that paratransit service will operate on a regular schedule. Subscription trips will be canceled. Customers with subscription trips wishing to travel on Monday should make a reservation, so they should call reservations. So that's just an FYI to make sure customers remember that. You already know about the AAC elections. We talked about those earlier in terms of who the committee had elected to the leadership positions for the AAC. I will also now move to the appointments for the bus rail subcommittee. The AAC, there was a nomination for bus rail subcommittee members. It was Ed McEntee to remain as chair of the bus rail subcommittee, Tino Calabia to be vice chair of the bus rail subcommittee, and Herbert Treaker to be second vice chair of the bus rail subcommittee. There were no other nominations. So at this time, I would like these AAC to move that forward and vote on those appointments.
Okay, so move to all those in favor of that motion that was put out there. Please do so by saying aye.
Aye.
Nays, abstentions, the motion carries as presented.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also want to give members a brief update for the AAC Travel Initiative. We have three members of the board and the GM, along with four members of the AAC, have already identified their routes and travel times to participate in the AAC Travel Initiative. So that will be coming up this October. The first trip with a member of the AAC and the board will happen on the 12th of August, and then we have trips. The 12th of October. Wrong month, 12th of October, with additional trips being made through the end of the month. We are setting it up now that the board's subcommittee meeting in November will be the time that the board members will be able to give feedback on their service in the trips, and of course AAC members will be able to give that feedback on their trips at that November meeting as well. The last point I want to talk about is the Accessibility Excellence Award that is coming up in November 2nd. At that time, members will be awarding the Hettinger Award. In the packet information and in the information members got via email is all the information about the nominees for the Hettinger Award. The vote will be electronic. This is how we have done it in the past. I know some members have shared their concern about that electronic vote, but would a member like to share now?
No. Okay.
So, but we just want to remind you'll get that information, and you members have a few days to respond to that email, and we can move that process forward. Yes, Doris. I see you, Patrick.
Okay.
I just did want to express the only thing that I see about the electronic vote is that it's not a private and independent vote. What I mean is because we're using email, it's tied to the person. So that did concern me. When the voting was going on the last time, so I just thought I'd remember that.
So let me clarify, and I think that's a very good point you're making in the sense where I think Doris is saying is, because all the votes are submitted to me, I do know how everyone voted because I recorded them. Now I'm bound by a personal and to the committee level of integrity that I would never share anything with anybody. But in 2 years, I think if that is a serious concern about total anonymity, we certainly could look at that in 2 years. Right now, there's only one person in the whole wide world who knows how everybody who submitted a vote voted, and that's me. But if we want to change even that, I think you raise a fair point. It's not totally anonymous, but it is 99% anonymous.
And then I want to say the question was asked, sans any present prejudice. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
It had nothing to do with you because I remembered that when I was thinking about it, that I wanted to say that it had nothing to do with who received the vote. It just had to do with the principle of the vote.
All right. I saw Patrick, and then Tappan, then Carolyn, then Steve. Oh, I guess on the same point here, what B is talking about.
So, B, I know we did bus rail subcommittee. Do we have to do metro access subcommittee and have chair and vice chair for that committee?
Well, Mr. Chair, there was no change in those subcommittee levels.
Right.
Those members had indicated that they wanted to remain, and so they were just remained appointed, but...
Can the committee confirm it, just like we did with bus rep?
Absolutely, the committee can. So on the floor, what we have is a point to confirm the current plus the current Metro Access chair and vice chair. We have Paul Sutton. Paul, please raise your hand. Thank you, Paul. So that's Paul Sutton. We have Denise Rush. Denise, please raise your hand. They are serving as the chair and the vice chair for the Metro Access Subcommittee. There were no one indicating that they were interested in moving into that position, so we're asking if the committee would be able to affirm their status as chair and vice chair.
So moved.
Discussion?
Discussion? Yes. I think Paul is the and I think he should stay. I think he needs had on the phone.
You're not coming on the line.
Anyway, I think things should stay the way they are. Don't you think so, everybody?
Yes, absolutely.
No changing, right? That works.
I've got a question. We are the subcommittee. We have first vice president and second vice president. I got this one. And why not in the last ADC subcommittee? President, vice president? Yes. Go ahead.
Yeah. The reason we did that is because you have the chair, and then you have the vice chair for bus, and then the vice chair for rail. Because you had two different entities there. With Metro Access, you just have a Metro Access.
I see.
Of course, we could elect an ability to ride chance. All right, moving on. Best to have a sense of the biggest list. Is motion on the floor? All those in favor of that?
Mr. Chair, you had Anthony over that had a discussion point for us.
I think this is before this motion.
Okay.
This is one of the other points with the administrative announcement. So let's do this motion and then go back to the list of people I have right here. So all in favor of this motion that's on the floor, please do so by saying aye.
Aye.
Nays. Abstentions. The motion carries. Now going back to Tabitha, Karen, Steve, and then this Anthony. Okay.
I have a question, Mr. Goldblick.
As it really personal nominations process.
You receive all the votes, and then you give us the results. Who got the maximum? You can't give us a count. Like every election is given.
Oh, sure, I could do that, but I didn't see what the. But no, I could do that if the committee makes a motion tonight and demands the vote count, because I don't want to create a situation where I'm just going. I hear your point. So I would say let's make a motion. If your committee members agree with you and want to hear the numbers, I will be happy to share them in a few minutes. If not, you know, that's a decision of the committee. I would leave that in the hands of the committee to decide. I'm sorry.
I will second the motion for purposes of discussion.
Yes.
No. My problem is. I don't vote. You remember what I said 2 years ago, and I don't vote. It's not that I don't trust you. It's just that since I don't vote, I have nothing to lose. Somebody should be able to go along with what you're saying. It's all up to what you say. Not that I don't trust you, but I don't trust any one person at any one time. Because you know what I'm saying. I do believe that there should be oversight on the board. There's nobody in the United States that can get elected without somebody else knowing. We've got to be two people. I'm serious. I've been saying it for 4 years.
That's questionable.
I'm saying it. Yeah. It's not that I don't trust you. It's just that I don't like the way you're going to follow the rules. We need to follow them all the way. My hand.
All right. Hold on, Doris. We have other people. Steve. And then
sure. I have something else for new business. But with respect to this, you know, I'm an auditor. That's what I do. I could not have said it better than I don't think it has anything to do with the numbers. I don't think the numbers really are relevant. Just for for everybody, including management's, documentation, if you will, of somebody performing oversight and maybe just signing that I reviewed the count and it's reasonable. Would that satisfy, Tapper, would that satisfy that without having numbers, but just a statement of oversight? Because a lot's happened in the last couple of minutes, this is the place where I can talk about what you were talking about on the condition.
Yes.
Okay. So my question for this is, people are taking the board members on ride-alongs, correct?
Yes.
Are we, as a committee, is there a way you're collecting sort of what we tell them, other than our voice, like, at them? Can you hear me?
Can I speak to that?
Yes, when he finishes your question, go
ahead. Yeah. I just want to know if there's some formal way we are documenting our trips so that we can bring it back to the board for you to compile them into a report or whatever it is that we're going to use it for.
Okay, Patrick, go ahead.
Thank you. I did a lot of the initial contacting of the individuals who are going to be taking these trips with board members. The point of the trip is really twofold. One, to get a board member familiar with what's going on with disabilities and those individuals. But more important, there are some specific outcomes that each one of the riders wants to give to the board member so that they know the reason for the riot was this, and that there are outcomes that we can measure and then go back to the board with and say, these things happen, otherwise these things need to be changed. Those outcomes, and that's a good question. I got the same question earlier today. Those outcomes and the trips will be somewhat scripted so that the individual understands they have talking points, they have reasons for taking that trip, they have things that they want to show that particular board member, so that we can have those outcomes. And then my thinking would be that after this is over, this is Elder's show, that Elder would either present the findings to the board or pass those findings on to Hill, who would then present them to the board, and they would be tracked. But this is a pretty highly scripted exercise because we want to make sure it goes off right. And I think that B, who has been a hunch with a lot of this stuff with Elmer, this is her boss's boss's boss. So she's going to make sure that what we do, how we do it, when we do it, and why we do it, is pretty locked down.
Yes,
sir.
And I just learned that there is a motion on the floor here that we have to take action on to make Carolyn Bellamy's, she doesn't vote, the oversight person when this happens. So is there a second to that motion?
Wait, I seconded.
Oh, you did? Oh, okay.
I seconded for the purpose of discussion.
Oh, okay, then there's discussion.
And so I have discussion.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. So, I think it would be good to have a count of the votes for candidates, if for nothing else, to verify that the numbers add up. Not that I don't trust anybody. I think usually though in Robert's rules for something like this, that it would actually be a member of the committee who would do that, leaving staff out. I mean, I know at the National Council on Independent Living, when we're voting on officers and such, the staff does count the votes, but it's a little bit different because the votes are taking
anonymously with actually computers at a meeting where one can, at or before the meeting, it's a long meeting when they do this, so that people can go and vote on the computer themselves, and then there are paper ballots as well. But there is one, I think we do, in fact, need to perhaps look at the bylaws in this regard, because I think, and I was on the bylaws committee, that we're fairly silent, that they're fairly silent on procedure. But one of the things that I also noticed about the electronic vote at this time is that there was really no opportunity if somebody wanted to do write-in, which is almost always the standard voting procedure. So I think that's another issue that really needs to be looked at. I'm not necessarily saying for this particular election, but certainly for the future, and therefore I would hope that we will support the idea of getting a vote. And please, other people were not cut off like that, and I am just finishing the sentence, which is so I hope that everybody will support this motion. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, so we already heard someone in support of this motion. Any other discussion before we move with this? Charlie and Donnie's?
Basically, the motion is that, I'm not going to restate the motion because George added a lot of stuff.
No, I didn't add anything to the motion. I just said why I think that we should. Right. Unless the mayor wants to add it.
Right, Charlie?
I would like to say that the motion be that during an electronic election, that at least one non-voting member and one member of the staff verify the votes, and that they can decide whether or not the numbers are necessary to share with the group.
Now, so are you offering this as a
friendly
amendment?
Yes.
Is that accepted?
I'd like a clean vote on this on this motion about just getting the results of this election and then anything for the future.
All right. So what committee, what do you want to do on this?
But if the major accepts it, then
well, the majority accepts it. You
it was Catherine's motion, so.
Okay, so you don't accept. The majority accepts?
Yes.
Alright, so.
Alright. So, alright. The second will relent to the
friendly amendment. Thank you. Alright, Charlie, you have the last word, then we're voting on this. What needs to be the microphone? There you go. Your last one, and then we're going to move forward and vote on this.
Okay. Yeah, I'm okay?
Yes.
I just want to say, I don't really care that the vote is verified that somebody won. Of course I care about that, but what I do care about is that the committee get an understanding of what the actual vote counts were in order to judge if there is a problem with people's sense of direction or whatever's going on. So that's why it's important to get actual vote counts. And it's not meant to prejudice anyone, it's just a matter of making sure that we understand where all the committee is coming.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so now we're going to go with the motion, with the friendly amendment. All those in favor of it, please do so by saying aye. Nays? Abstentions? Motion carries. Yes.
Since this election has already taken place, and the results already announced, I am assuming that this rule would would pertain to future elections. Correct?
Yeah. Well, not getting the vote count.
But I'm saying, no, I'm asking that this motion that we just voted on will pertain to future elections and not the recent past election.
That was not what was the introduced motion. The introduced motion was that before the amendment by Ms. Ruff, the introduced motion was simply, correct me if I'm wrong, Captain, that we simply get a vote count, an announced vote count, for tally for this election.
No, for this election.
For
future elections.
No, listen. I'm telling you, you're asking a question.
I'm sorry, I cannot hear you.
I'm answering your question. It is for the future nominations, not for this one. Can you hear me?
That's not what I seconded.
Well,
what I seconded was, what I seconded was the request, and I continue to be the seconder. What I seconded was the request that we have, a motion that we have a tally from the current election, not who voted what, but a tally. That's all.
Numbers.
That's why I said they could be
Are we saying for this election or for future? We
are reporting the results by number. That's what I understood it was being.
Okay.
By number.
We're going to have to start over because, it's my understanding, all we need to fully understand is this for the future or for this election? How many vote this is for the future?
No, I'm the one who's second. I will absolutely withdraw my second. That's why I said,
well, then
go with the motion as it was presented, which was, I'm the one who brought it to the future.
You don't have to start yelling.
Yes.
I'm not yelling, I'm making my
You can withdraw your second. We can get another second.
I second.
But I want to clarify I want to clarify what Captain Banerjee said was the motion and clarifying that point of information. It takes priority in Robert's Rules of Order.
We clearly understand your clarification.
I have not withdrawn because I haven't heard the motion. From Captain
Mr. Chair, I just want to make sure we are mindful that in the passionate discussion that we have someone that has interpreter services, and we are not being kind to our fellow AAC members to make sure that they have all the services they need. Additionally, I want everyone to know that we only have 2 minutes left for our services tonight, and we won't have interpreter services. So we have to make sure we wrap this up or table it until the next AAC meeting.
I say we table it to the next AAC meeting.
All right,
that's a table. So move to table is not debatable.
Not on that.
In law, yeah. Move to table is not debatable.
Move to table.
Move to table. All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Thank you.
I'm sorry, I'm interrupting, but I just wanted to say for a moment that I think we should give Patrick Sheehan a round of applause.
Woo!
He's taking his place. This was a baby you just saw through to graduation from college, and we salute you for that. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, very much. We now have our motion adjourned, Ms. Rush.
I just want to thank Michelle for moving the meeting from night to the event so I can get my prayer on that.
All right.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
And Madam Chair, I need to ask a question. So when the chair of Posner left the room,
He asked me to help take over, help facilitate the meeting.
Okay, because that's something I'd also like you to talk about next time. Because
so I may get them so that Phil left and I'm coming over to
the system. No, what I mean though is that given that Denise is the vice chair, I mean, it seems to me that that naturally would fall to her. And Denise, you know, being, you know, that you're going to be in that capacity, I'd just like to ask the members that, you know, when the gavel comes down, that's to be respected. We want to have an orderly meeting. That's how we got to the issue with the interpreters having a meeting. And one last announcement before we go. Seated next to me is Terry and Williams Hall. Some of you met her, some of you have not. She is the acting director of Metro Access as of, I guess now it's been a couple of weeks. As of September 11th. Okay, so which we will not interpret as anything other than a dance. Okay, and she comes to us from Metro's IT department, but she has a long background in operations, call centers, customer service. She's doing a fine job. We introduced her at the Metro Access Subcommittee, and I just wanted you to know that she was here this evening, observing the deliberations, and here in case you have any questions relating to Metro Access. So I hope you'll join me in welcoming her to the Access Services family. She can clearly see the role the AAC plays, and you all are a group of folks who have great interest in the services that we provide, and she'll be here going forward to work with you. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing that last announcement.
Just remember, I